we're not going to let people do school reform in the name of school reform in a way that, that makes the schools bad. We're, us educators have a real stake in that.
Yes, open up your eyes. I mean, look all across the country at what we're seeing. And I guess this is a testament to what Donald Trump has done. The movement is finally, folks have awakened to the fact that the right wing of this country, the Wall Street folks, and some conservative Democrats, they've really targeted public education. And what you're seeing is, you know, you're seeing organizing going on all over the place. In the beginning of March, in New York, you saw, you know, students, teachers, parents, taxpayers out marching in the streets throughout New York on March 4th, the People's March for Education Justice, which is why we've asked Luz Cristina Ramirez Mooney to come talk with us. She's a New York City teacher, also a one of our badass teacher friends. Luz, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, you know, I look at this and I see all of this organizing going on. And the first thing I ask people who are at the front of this is, did you think that when you got into teaching that this is what you'd be doing?
Absolutely not. I had no idea. It was, you know, I got into the profession wanting to, you know, serve my students, serve my classroom. And there was always this angst, this something that I couldn't quite put my finger on. And then I met that and it all fell into place.
It gave you that outlet to find other people, because one of the things that it's like any of these kind of situations, be it, you know, teaching, being at, you know, working in truck driving jobs or whatever, is once you find out that there are others thinking the way you are and seeing what you're seeing, it gives you an opportunity to say, you know what, maybe we can change things.
Absolutely. Yeah, that camaraderie certainly helps when you're, you know, down in the trenches.
So now on March 4th, you guys had this big march across New York, the People's March for Education Justice. Tell me about it.
So several communities across the state stood together, you know, not just about education, but many diverse issues that, you know, our young people are facing with, you know, being considered adults in the court system at 16 years old, you know, so about raising the age, about, you know, culturally appropriate curriculum, you know, as well as the funding and the millions spent on high-stakes testing.
And
so
the
about...
Mm-hmm, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to...
So about 10 years ago, the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, they took New York State to court, and they won and were able to establish the foundation aid. And that was established so that communities in need could be equally served. You know, every, you know, we could follow the Constitution and everyone can have, you know, access to equitable education. But over the past 10 years, it hasn't been fulfilled completely. So now we're at the point where we have $4.3 billion that has not been allocated to our public schools.
Wow. And again, you know, you look at here where I'm at in Pennsylvania, it's the same kind of thing where you have this because of the tax base and because most of our education here where I live is based on property taxes, you have this massive inequality in, you know, inner city schools as opposed to suburban schools, and the state has kind of walked away from it. So it kind of sounds like what you guys are trying to do there is create that funding formula that you leveled the playing field. It just hasn't happened.
Exactly. And then that on top of the tax cap, which we also have a property tax cap that we deal with, a 2% tax cap, that's also part of that, you know, purposefully, you know, underfunding our public schools. So and then in the budget that Governor Cuomo just released, that is still waiting to be voted on, he wants to eliminate that foundation for aid. It's like three pages of language that he wants eliminated from the budget. So he doesn't want to pay for what he's already owed, and he doesn't want to be held accountable for fulfilling that funding in the future.
And one would argue that by cheating those kids out of that education early, we're going to end up paying a lot more of it in the long run because, well, they lost out on an education, didn't they?
Absolutely. And then what also I came to find out today is that in his budget, he also is reducing funding for libraries.
So this is a Democrat we're talking about, right?
You would think, right? In name alone, he's a Democrat because his policies and practices that he chooses to implement aren't to, you know, serve your regular person.
Now, the reason I bring that up is because, you know, a lot of people like to point at the Republicans, but honestly, the Democrats have their fair share of people attacking education as well.
Absolutely.
And that's why I think having facts, not alternative facts, but actual facts, I think that's important so that you can hold not just the Republicans accountable, but the Democrats.
I would agree. And there's certainly like this alternative facts that are coming from his office. You know, he claims that he spent the most that he's ever spent on public education. Meanwhile, he reduces the library funding. Meanwhile, he doesn't maintain the foundation aid. He claims that the foundation aid should only be for New York City, but the foundation aid addresses the Constitution, and the Constitution covers the entire state.
Right. And the other part of this is, you know, that belief, and I hear this a lot, that, well, that education, that's just, you know, those inner city poor areas, that's just those people. But the reality is, you know, poverty doesn't know a zip code. There are a lot of rural areas that are just as poor as those inner cities are.
Absolutely. And these are communities that, you know, need these public schools as well as their libraries, because they may be their only source, you know, for internet use, their only source for job, you know, for looking for jobs online. You know, it's a welcoming space for all New Yorkers, you know, regardless of ethnicity, religion, you know, country of origin, and he wants to cut those services also with this budget.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I also look at the way we spend money. I mean, I've got some right wingers that, you know, Rick, you can't throw money at a problem. And I go, well, let's try. Hasn't been done before. Let's give it a shot. But maybe spending some of the money that we have a little bit better. And I look at these high stakes testing. And again, the farther down this road we get to all of this standardized testing, the more we realize it ain't working.
It's not. No. And the focus on the testing, we know, you know, as educators, it narrows curriculum. You know, it underserves all our kids. You know, the testing is abusive to my 10-year-old autistic son. And yet my daughter, who's 12, who, you know, excels academically, she receives no benefit at all from this test, because it's not like we can ever look at it after she's done with it.
Right. Well, we get to see it. We don't get to see the test. We get a number, and I think it's like 6-8 months later we get the big number. And by then we've already...
Yeah, but if I were to look at the questions that she got right or the questions that she got wrong, I don't have access to that.
Oh, no, that's proprietary.
Where do I know where her strengths and weaknesses are if you don't let me see the test?
Well, that's not the point of these tests.
Mm.
And again, you know, this is part of what I've brought up, because, look, we've opted our kids out the last several years from the standardized tests, and... you know, the kids are like, well, we don't have to take tests. Yeah. And I go, no. Dad's not anti-testing, anti these testing. I'm all in favor of, you know, knowing what, finding out what you know or what you don't know, more importantly, and then helping you to get that knowledge. These tests are not that.
Exactly. Yeah. It should be able not only just for the teacher to pinpoint where their weaknesses are, but for the students to also see where they excel and where they need some improvement. And those tests don't serve that purpose. You're right.
Right. So, you know, in this march you guys had on March 4th, what kind of response did you get from what I thought was an amazing speech? And we'll make sure we get a link at thericksmithshow.com so folks can take a look at it. What kind of response did you get?
Great. You know, people were very receptive. A lot of, you know, when you look at the numbers, you know, when we look at the millions that each of the districts is owed individually, and when you look at where the money is focusing, you know, and when we look at also, you know, the percentage of poverty that we have in our communities, like in the district where I work, we're at 60% poverty. So, you know, focusing so much on these tests is just ignoring that issue of poverty that all our children are living in.
Which, you know, I would argue is probably the number one reason kids in those schools don't do as well. Because, look, if you've got all that baggage coming into the classroom, maybe you didn't eat that morning. Maybe, you know, mom wasn't home all night because she was working or whatever the situation is. That is not, it's not conducive for learning.
Absolutely.
So the question then comes back to, you know, how do we fix that? How do we make sure that kids get the best opportunities? How do we mitigate for poverty? Or is it possible? I mean,
I think we as community members certainly have to, you know, engage in our elected officials. I mean, we can't let them get away with it. I'm more of the, you know, these elected officials' offices should not be able to do any business. They shouldn't be able to conduct a meeting. They shouldn't be able to answer a phone call without addressing this issue of the education transformation law here in New York State. Because the education transformation law in New York State requires schools to count 50% of their evaluation on these private tests. That's written in the law. So we really need to contact our elected officials and demand that they amend that law. until we can change it legislatively, I don't know how we're going to get above it.
Wow.
As well as the opt-out movement, of course.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's the beginning of how we end this whole system and take back public education. Because as our listeners have, you know, heard me say a thousand times, this is the hill that the working class of this country has to die on. Once they privatize education and profitize it and make it unattainable for many of us, it's game over.
It is, and you're right. And when any of our kids lose, we all lose.
But I guess, again, you go back to, you know, who's really important. I mean, we just saw the Attorney General of the United States say we're going back to for-profit prisons. So, you know, if we steal a kid's money at the beginning so that they don't get an education, Education Incorporated makes a bunch of money, and then Prison Incorporated makes a boatload of money on the other end. It's a GOP win-win.
Yep, and that's part of the conversation that we need to have. When these tests are designed to show that our kids aren't ready for college or aren't ready for a career, what's left for them? Prison. You know, is that what we want for the children in our community?
And it comes back to that, you know, pay me now or pay me later. And it seems like we don't want to pay now, but we're almost willing to pay a whole bunch more later. And that's the kind of short-sighted, ridiculous part of this that just leaves me scratching my head.
Yep. But, you know, it takes us engaging our community members. It takes us engaging our neighbors, you know, having these conversations. Because when we don't talk about it, you know, when it's hidden, it goes through. You know, we have to shine light on what's going on.
So what's the justification from the Cuomo people that they have to make all of these cuts? You know, is there any, has he made any statements? Has he justified this in any way?
Like we mentioned before with the alternative facts, you know, he claims that he's serving the children. He claims that he's the advocate for the kids, when in reality, you know, he votes down, you know, legislation that will help our young people not be treated as criminals or will help them financially when they end up in the court system. But yet the next day he'll stand and say that he's for, you know, free tuition for colleges. You know, he says one thing, but then he votes in a different direction.
Now, how can you be for free college for everyone when you're not getting them through K-12?
Exactly.
It seems kind of short-sighted. It seems political, because at the end of the day, if they can't get into college, well, maybe that's it. Maybe if they can't get into it, you don't have to give them the free college. You can say, hey, I'm for free college. They just couldn't get in.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah, but again, you know, that's not the purpose of our public school system. You know, even our advanced public school system, that's, you know, the purpose isn't to keep more people out.
Scary, scary stuff. So, you know, last line of questioning I've got for you. When you look at this march, I mean, this is obviously the beginning of a movement to get people aware. You know, when you look at this, obviously, as the beginning, what do you hope the next steps are?
Well, we're going to keep contacting our legislators. We're actually having lobby days with our local elected officials across the state to continue the conversation. We're doing door-to-door, you know, walking the pavement and informing people of their rights of opting out, you know, the effects that the tests have, you know, locally as well as statewide. And it's just, again, continuing to have those conversations. And you have to have them in areas where we typically wouldn't have them. You know, when you and I are talking to each other, it's like we're preaching to the choir.
Right.
You have to go to those spaces and areas where they're not having these conversations. And, you know, so you go to your local Democratic committee, or you go to your local Republican committee, or even go to the conservative meetings and try to shine some light there. You know, it's going to be uncomfortable, but that's the way we're going to win.
And you also have to go into rural areas, which is where, you know, this debate never really takes place. You have to go into those rural communities that are struggling, because the frame in this country is that, well, the poverty, the failing schools are all just those schools of color in poor neighborhoods.
Yeah. But you know what? But when you have the conversation, you can even see the effects in schools where they may not be majority people, you know, children of color, you know, because we can see, like, in our own districts, where as teachers, what are you doing with your common planning time? You know, is the majority of your common planning time spent looking at data? Okay, well, that's fundamentally wrong. That's not why we're here. You know, when are we going to have time to share, you know, practices in our classroom? You know, not just, you know, rote memorization as well, you know, and when you talk to parents, you know, what are they doing for art? What are they doing for, music classes. And it's like, oh, those aren't those things that aren't available. So then why aren't they available? So, you know, talk about the amount of time they spend doing the things that bring them joy, you know, versus the test prep.
Well, that's not what we should be doing. It's about grill and drill and keep the butt in the seat and none of that playing, none of those humanity stuff, science and math.
Yeah, but you have some pioneers, you know. You have Dr. Haynes on Long Island with the, you know, whole child. I think he calls it PEAS. And it's looking at, you know, emotional growth as well as academic growth as well as socialization. The kids spend a mandatory 40 minutes of recess a day.
Love that.
And the kids have shown an increase in attendance, you know, a decrease in referrals. You know, and all that, you know, and what they did is they added like yoga and 40 minutes of recess. So, you know, looking at the whole child as opposed to just what that score number is going to be, just, the, you know, as opposed to just looking at the score.
Yeah, and don't make kids hate learning because, you know, they'll hate it for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a nun that I had when I went to school that if I knew where they buried her, I would dig her up so I could kill her again, simply because that woman made me hate reading. And I hated reading until I was about 30.
Wow.
Just because of that woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm happy you don't hold it against the rest of us.
Oh, it was just her. But Luz, I appreciate you taking time for us. Great talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Great talking with you. Luz Christina Ramirez Mooney, New York City teacher there. And look, if you want to take a look at the video, we'll get a link at the RickSmithShow.com. Just click on Luz's name, take you right there. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Thank you for your support. If you're helping to raise children as a parent, teacher, family member, etc., I acknowledge the sacrifices that you make, and I thank you. Now, in terms of this music, I hope it comes across very clearly how much I love teaching and how much I believe we must do better for our children. As a veteran teacher, I've seen the damage caused by ill-conceived reforms and the era of teacher bashing, labeling students, and labeling schools. We need as much support as possible to fight this machine that's not making decisions with the best interest of children in mind. Please. With us.
We're yelling, stop this madness from the front lines, bringing you a breath of fresh air. Check the sun